Planes powered by GE Aerospace Technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
This morning, we may be a step closer to emergency authorization of a single-dose COVID-19 vaccine. A look at the timetable, as well as the unusual approach drug companies are taking to ramp up production during the pandemic.
We don't really see them cooperating. We typically see them fiercely competing against one another.
Plus, the cryptocurrency rally has fizzled out, at least for now.
It's not like a stock or a bond where it might have reliable cash flows coming in. It's really just worth what the next guy will buy it from you for.
And the latest on golf legend Tiger Woods' recovery following his car accident. It's Wednesday, February 24th. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal, and this is what's news. We're expecting to hear from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration today about its analysis of Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine. Its vaccine is different because it requires only one dose. An advisory committee is slated to meet on Friday. Today's release is a key step that could lead to emergency authorization. J&J has said it would deliver about 20 million doses for use in the U.S. by the end of March. A bit later in our podcast, we'll look at how rival drug companies are forming surprising partnerships during the pandemic. In Texas, there is fallout after blackouts left millions of people across the state without electricity and heat during the deep freeze. The chair and four members of the board of the power grid operator, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, are resigning. This comes as the operator faces backlash for resorting to widespread rolling blackouts amid the severe winter storm. In a joint resignation letter, the board members acknowledged that criticism and said they were stepping aside to allow state leaders to more easily move forward. GameStop's chief finance officer and executive vice president Jim Bell is stepping down. This departure comes just weeks after the social media-led trading frenzy sent the company's share price soaring. Bell was appointed in June 2019 and will resign his post March 26th. GameStop didn't give a reason for his departure. Bell didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. And golf legend Tiger Woods is currently awake, responsive, and recovering in his hospital room following surgery. That's according to a statement posted to his Twitter account. Woods sustained significant leg injuries in a car accident on Tuesday. We've talked about the rally surrounding cryptocurrencies, but on Tuesday, it lost steam, knocking prices for Bitcoin and Ether from recent highs. To better understand what's behind the slump, we're going to turn to markets columnist Mike Bird in Hong Kong. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mark.
So, Mike, we've seen a lot of enthusiasm for cryptocurrencies, but it's volatile.
It's incredibly volatile, yeah. Certainly compared to other asset classes, the moves up and down in Bitcoin are just extremely large. And that's partly due to the fact that it's just a very speculative asset. It's not like a stock or a bond where it might have reliable cash flows coming in. It's really just worth what the next guy will buy it from you for. So you're going to see wild swings in it, as with any other speculative asset, as people try to get a grip on, yeah, what someone else is willing to pay for it.
So it seems like this is an asset that's still trying to find its way. We have governments trying to figure out potential regulation, and companies are interested in it.
Yeah, so this is one of the big opportunities and also the big risks for Bitcoin. You saw Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen talking about it being highly speculative the other day, but you've also seen Tesla buying and holding Bitcoin. Now, if you see major companies buying and holding Bitcoin as an asset and you see that as the future for it, then it may well be undervalued even now. It may not be expensive at all if this is going to become part of the general universe of investable assets. You're going to see major American corporations being interested in buying and holding it. Then that's a really big deal. But at the same time, when governments see that happening, they start to worry about these corporations holding the speculative asset. If the regulation becomes more onerous, that could be a real problem. So it's still an asset with a lot of risk, potentially a lot of opportunity. It's very difficult to say at the moment.
Mike Bird, breaking down the latest on cryptocurrencies. Mike, thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Mark.
And today we'll get a report on new home sales. We've seen low mortgage rates and strong demand both helping to propel sales and boost construction, but it's leading to higher prices for homes, lumber, and other building materials. Just ahead, competitors team up during the pandemic. We'll look at what drug makers are doing after the break.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace Technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. By empowering the brightest minds, GE Aerospace is reimagining engine design and advanced aircraft systems, developing hybrid electric engines and technologies compatible with alternative fuels like sustainable aviation fuel. GE Aerospace strives every day to invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
As we mentioned earlier in the show, we're expecting to hear today from the FDA about its analysis of Johnson & Johnson's single-dose COVID-19 vaccine. If it's approved, the next step is ramping up production. That step in the process has been a tricky one for some vaccine makers, and it's leading to unusual alliances between pharmaceutical companies that in normal times would be fierce rivals. Here to talk about it is the WSJ's Jared Hopkins. He covers pharma for us. Jared, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Jared, we've seen things like Novartis agreeing to help Pfizer and BioNTech produce vaccine doses, and a vaccine from Novavax being made by companies like Baxter and Endo. How unusual are these sorts of partnerships?
Big pharmaceutical companies, as a lot of us know, are known as fiercely competitive, you know, running ads on TV or having big sales forces out in doctor's offices and suing each other over patents, right? But they've come together here to manufacture COVID vaccines for certain steps. And this isn't typically what we see pharma companies. We don't really see them cooperating. We typically see them fiercely competing against one another.
And so what do some of these partnerships actually entail? What do they look like in practice, and how are they changing the way things are done?
The industry for the last year has been sort of working on contract manufacturing and setting up manufacturing networks. AstraZeneca, you know, which has a vaccine authorized in the UK and other countries, but not in the US at this point, you know, they created this sort of matrix of manufacturing network for their vaccine. And Moderna has set up a number of contractors too. What we're seeing though in the last few weeks, the last couple of months, is Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, Novavax sort of advance on these sort of rivalry and contract manufacturing aspects, which reflects the sort of urgency and the sort of frankly, immediacy of that people have right now with trying to make increased vaccine supply.
Well, let's talk about the reasons for this change. Is this like an insurance policy for the drug makers in case complications arise?
There have been a few manufacturing hiccups. There's been some difficulty getting raw materials. There's been some lower than expected output for some of these companies. But these collaborations are really about not only trying to avoid issues like that, but also ensuring that delivery and supply continues uninterrupted and that supply, frankly, can ramp up. Everybody wants this pandemic to end. And as long as there are enough vaccines quickly available, that's a possibility of happening sooner rather than later.
Let's talk about the financial side of this. Drug companies are big dollar enterprises with such a focus on COVID vaccine production. Is money being lost or gained right now?
So the impact on the general pharmaceutical drug business has generally been a little bit up and down over the last year. There were some sort of pressures early on because of lockdowns and personal, you know, behavior changing, where sales reps couldn't necessarily go into hospitals or doctors' offices. We've seen in the industry sort of a rebound in some of that, but there are pressures, and companies have reported these pressures and some impact on sales. But things are sort of, the hope is that sort of vaccines sort of open that up or sort of turn that around. Pfizer has estimated that they're going to generate $15 billion in sales in their COVID vaccine this year. So there is a business opportunity here as well. And other companies have said that the vaccines are expected to be either seasonally or annually a need for people around the world. So there is a sort of an emerging COVID-19 vaccine durable business here.
And looking forward, are these partnerships likely to last beyond the pandemic or even lead to partnerships on, say, cancer or other issues?
So it's unclear sort of how long this team of rivals concept will last. In the case of Sanofi, they said, look, we have a 6-month window here with a free production line. But after that, you know, we're going to go back to our own COVID vaccine development program. But yeah, you know, there are companies have said there's going to be a need for boosters, that COVID-19 vaccines might become an annual or even seasonal sort of thing. So this is going to be something ongoing. Whether the collaborations remain, that we don't really know. And I think that consultants I speak to are a little skeptical of that. They sort of see this as, you know, this is a unique, sort of unprecedented moment where everybody's coming together. But when it's all done and over, everybody's going to go back to fighting one another out there in, you know, in the pharma market.
Jared Hopkins covers the pharma sector for The Wall Street Journal. Jared, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, during the pandemic, there has been a huge shift to online retail. More people are paying for things with credit cards, but swipe fees, which merchants pay when a customer pays by card, are often higher for online purchases. The Journal's Anna Maria Andriotis has more.
The shift in consumer spending has had this kind of two-sided effect on merchants. On the one hand, the ability for people to shop online has been good for merchants in that it has helped to elevate their sales more than they otherwise would have been because of the pandemic. On the other hand, these types of purchases can be costlier. So ultimately, what this means is that a greater share of spending is happening in a costlier way right now for merchants.
And that's what's news for Wednesday. We're back tonight with a new show. And if you like our show, please let us know by rating and reviewing us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.